You're listening to the Tennis.com podcast, and here's your host, Ed McGrogan.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Tennis.com podcast. A little bit of a break, but Steve Tigner and I are back to talk Madrid. And, you know, this is just the start of a pretty big gauntlet of big clay court events. Really starts kind of the whole summer stretch, in my opinion. Before we get into that, Steve, I wanted to mention a new feature we have on the site that maybe you've seen already. You listeners, past day or so, first ball in. Steve, maybe you can kind of explain what we'll be seeing going forward.
Yeah, I guess you would call that post. It's sort of a table setter. It's going to be each day, Monday through Friday, a look back at what had happened the day before, a look ahead, a little preview of the next day, and then maybe a look at a couple of articles or sort of developments in the sport that maybe we want to comment on, just sort of a centering point for the site on what's happening each day and somewhere to go each day to find out, you know, what's coming up, what I might have missed. So, you know, that's what we hope for from that post.
Yeah, there is a lot. I think, you know, we thought about this idea. There is so much, you know, that I think needs that hub to kind of really catch you up on, you know, so many different tournaments, events, news bits. And I also want to mention that we're going to be doing this when the tours are in Europe for the most part. We're going to post this after the day's play, you know, right around 4 p.m. Eastern time. And when the tournaments come back to the States and play ends in the evening, you know, U.S. time, you're going to have this first ball and post the next morning about 10 a.m. Eastern. So you can look for that, you know, at various times depending on where the tours are. But yeah, the idea is the same, you know, regardless. You know, let's get into Madrid a little bit here. And this morning we got the latest withdrawal from the tournament. Even though this tournament is actually in its fourth day, the way it's structured, we had a withdrawal on the men's side, a big one, Roger Federer pulling out because his wife Mirka is expecting their next child. And actually, the one thing I thought about this right away is that Federer, you know, he'll miss Madrid, he'll probably miss Rome, I'm sure, but it probably does eliminate the possibility of him missing the French Open.
Yeah, I think in Monte Carlo, he mentioned that he might have to miss some tournaments, and then he was asked, what about the French Open? And he said, well, if it comes to that, yes, we'll see about that. But he didn't originally mention the French Open, so I think that probably seemed like a distant possibility for him. So, yeah, I think dropping out of this 2 weeks ahead of the French Open probably makes it more likely that he'll play in Paris. And, you know, that's obviously the one that he would choose not to miss. He hasn't missed a Grand Slam in close to 60 Grand Slams. So yeah, that in a way, for Federer fans, it might be good news that this is happening now.
I have to think that's kind of a record that he is, you know, I think proud to hold to. He did pass, I think it was Santoro about a year or so back, if I'm not mistaken, with the most consecutive Grand Slams played. And like you said, even though, you know, Madrid is a tournament that Federer has had pretty, you know, great success at, you know, certainly any more shots he would have at Roland Garros is the priority there. And he, you know, he joins Djokovic on the outs for this tournament. Djokovic is out with an arm injury. You know, I think, of course, also with Roland Garros in mind, it certainly be silly for him to kind of risk that. And he, you know, he really didn't look great in Monte Carlo when he had that on. So, you know, that leaves this men's tournament as, you know, sort of as usual as Rafael Nadal's tournament to lose. You know, I think it takes on even greater importance for Rafa to kind of get back on track here. You know, what are your thoughts on where Rafa sits in all this?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think especially if he plays Wawrinka, now it sort of becomes a tournament about Nadal and Wawrinka for the time being. I think this is a real opportunity for Rafa to get a win. This was the first Clay Masters he won last year, and then he kind of rolled through almost through the rest of the season from here. But I think a loss, I don't know if with Djokovic's current status, his current sort of injured, and you know, it's a little tentative to say what's going to happen with him. I don't know if that makes this as essential for Nadal to, you know, I think the idea overall would be to at least keep pace with Djokovic, and I think he's doing that. You know, I think this is more of an opportunity for him. If he doesn't win, I don't think it's a, you know, it means he loses more ground to, you know, to the other top players. Then again, a match with Wawrinka, that would be an interesting match, and that would have repercussions if that's the final.
You know, that's true. That might be the only instance where I would see it as a really a telling point about Nadal, is if he does go up against Wawrinka. And, you know, I think a lot of people are moving Wawrinka into, you know, short of Djokovic and Nadal, you know, maybe he most likely is at this point the third in command for, you know, really for predicting the French Open there. But otherwise, I think the point does, I think you're sort of alluding to this, is the point needs to be made that even if Nadal, you know, does not win this, it would be pretty surprising if he did not go into the French Open with any tournament win. I have to say that would be just inconceivable just a few weeks ago. But the French for Rafa is a totally different animal, as we've always seen. And you know, Rafa did enter that point of the season 2 years ago, or 3 years ago, after those losses to Djokovic. And, you know, it was, you know, I guess no worse for the wear when it came down to it in the end.
Yeah, you know, the French Open, its own, since it's such a long event in itself, it seems like sort of everything else is instantly forgotten but it becomes like a new little season of its own, and the other Masters kind of fade away, and it becomes about how well you're playing in Paris.
Yeah, to me, I think the most, you know, the takeaways I'm looking for this week, I think Stan is the big one, of course. I'm also curious to really see what players like Ferrer and Almagro do. You know, they have just beaten Nadal in the past month. You know, obviously the draw is a little less imposing without, you know, the two Djokovic and Federer names eliminated. You know, I think it's a tournament where we will see probably perhaps an unlikely entrant into this weekend. And, you know, usually you can't figure out who it is, but, you know, maybe it's one of those two guys that kind of find their way in. Not that Ferrer is chopped liver, of course, but it would depart from, I think, the conventional Novak Rafa that we've expected for so long.
Yeah, you also have to look at Andy Murray, who was in Federer's quarter. Is this an opportunity for him? And I was watching Ernest Gulbis this morning and Dolgopolov, or people like that, they're down on the Djokovic side. Is this a chance for them to get to a semi or even a final of a Masters, you know? So we'll see.
The women's side of this, I contrast it with the men's in a big way, in that, you know, as you mentioned leading up to this, the women's draw gets, you know, there's no buys. It's a really strong draw. There's really top matches, you know, I think right away. You know, I think in the first round we had, you know, you covered Bouchard and Radwanska. You know, we're going to see, you know, coming up tomorrow, I believe, you know, have Lee and Stevens. We're going to have a pretty impressive slate, really, from the get-go. You know, even though this was a women's event that started this past Saturday. And I always wonder, you know, I think it's been talked about, you know, from, I think, a general perspective that in Europe, the women do sort of get the short shift on these events here. I think it's a little more pronounced, perhaps, even though, you know, we have moved toward the dual gender clay masters or clay tournaments. You know, I would like to see, I think this is a good opportunity for the WTA and its players to really, you know, assert their, what their product in contrast to kind of a down men's tournament.
Yeah, I think that's true. This is probably as close as you get to the feeling of a WTA Masters event, you know, with everybody, pretty much everybody there except Azarenka. the men, not as many as of the big names. Obviously, you take Federer and Djokovic out. There's a couple of marquee names gone. But and then on the women's, you still have Serena, Sharapova, Ivanovic, Radwanska, Sloan, Lina. You know that this, yeah, like you said, this is a chance for them to really generate some interest. And also, I think one of the reasons in Madrid that they've never really gotten good court times or good court placements for the women. It's usually early in the day before a lot of the fans are there, and that's still been true this year. Maybe, you know, maybe that with a few less big men's names to fit in, maybe that you would hope that could change.
What have you seen thus far from watching over the past few days? It's mostly been women's to start. We got the ATP slate come in the past couple of days. Yeah, this morning I saw we had some nice men's matches as well. Yeah, Fanini, Dolgopolov. But what have you seen pretty much over the first 3.5 days in Madrid that's caught your eye?
Well, this morning Golbus beat Janowicz in 3 sets. Dolgopolov was actually impressive against Fognini in that he kept his concentration. Fognini was doing his usual, he's up to his usual antics. He grabbed the chair umpire at one point. He tried to have somebody removed from the crowd, but Dolgopolov kept his concentration. I think that was a good sign from him. On the women's side, I was impressed today. I wasn't impressed by the way Sharapova played, but she came back from 4-1 down to McHale. She completely turned it around there. So she seems to be in pretty good form as far as her confidence and winning after Stuttgart last week. And also the same for David Ferrer, like you said, he beat Rafa a couple weeks ago. He sort of has a year. It's sort of been a year where it seems like he's going to fade away, and then he doesn't quite do it. He was down 6-2 in the first set tiebreaker to Ramos today, and then he came back and won that. So, he's still a name to be reckoned with.
Yeah, it's true about Ferrer that he still has made. He still has not fallen off the map there, not even close at, I think, close to 32 by now in age. I could be off by a year there, but this is the time of year he obviously makes hay. There are a lot of important clay events coming up in the next 3 weeks, of course. In about a 15-day span, we're going to see the conclusion of Madrid, the entire Rome tournament, and as everybody, I think, knows by now, a Sunday start at Roland Garros. And, as I said in the beginning, it is definitely a gauntlet of important tournaments, of matches. It seems to me like it's kind of another example of the tennis getting in the way of practicality in the schedule. I'm sort of reminded of that after watching the Rangers and hockey play 5 games in 7 days, that sometimes common sense doesn't get in the way. Common sense does not prevail when there are so many entities. And it's a lot to ask. I think really, there's excitement to be seen from Madrid and Rome back to back, but overall I do think it's sort of too much too soon.
Yeah, I think most of the players and even fans would tell you that a week in between Madrid and Rome would be ideal. They obviously just haven't been able to find it with Monte Carlo still there, another Masters. This weekend when you go straight from Madrid, everybody goes straight to Rome. There's a couple other points in the year like that where one of the tournaments eventually suffers. It's tough to have 2 in a row where everyone's at the top of their game. And also the French Open starting on Sunday, that's also something where I think a lot of people consider overkill. It's good for fans who can't get there during the week, but it does make the event seem, you've got 2 weeks already. It does seem, at least in my opinion, to be too much.
Yeah, with you on that. Steve, we'll look for the next first ball in later today, throughout the week, as we said. Plenty of coverage in Madrid and the rest of the clay circuit on tennis.com. Thank you for listening. Tennis.com.
You've been enjoying Tennis.com's weekly podcast. Thanks for listening. For all the latest news and events, head over to Tennis.com.